You're listening to Radio Aryan at RadioAryan.com.
Hello and welcome to Truth Will Out Radio. Today's date is Friday, the 7th of September, 2018. You're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, and we're streaming live at RadioAryan.com. Because with me today, I have the producer of Adolf Hitler, the greatest story never told, Communism by the Back Door, and the Freemasonic victors of World War II, Mr. Dennis Wise. Dennis, how are you doing today?
Well, I'm not the best of weeks. I've lost a fair bit of weight.
That's
my way of saying I have four teeth out.
Dennis, nasty.
And do you know something? I've never had toothache in my life because my father never gave me toffees. And I never give my lads toffees, and they've never had toothache. But the teeth were broken, and over a period of time, they were cutting into my tongue, so I couldn't put up with it any longer. So I had all four out this week and suffered.
Well, that must be quite a relief, actually, to have them out if they were cutting your tongue.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, well, that were the reason, really. Otherwise, I'd have battled on, but no, they were too sharp. They're like shark's teeth.
Well, it's hard to concentrate when you're in pain as well. You know, it's...
I'll do my best.
I'm not surprised you haven't produced another video for us yet within a week.
I started this week, and even now it's in its preliminary stages, so anything could happen. We're getting there.
What have you been looking at then for the preliminary stages? Can you let us know yet?
Yeah, well, we're looking at the, I think we mentioned it last week, didn't we, the miracle Fatima.
Ah, and, yes.
Yeah, because not a lot of people, I mean, I don't want to turn it into a religious, conversion DVD, but I've got to mention it because it's all part of it. I mean, even Putin sent one of his delegation to ask the Vatican about it. And the Pope refused, being the Pope, and only this week enhances his reputation even more.
Yeah, I'd like to hear more about some of these miracles that go on with the Catholic Church. I mean, you don't really hear about miracles elsewhere, but the Catholic Church had a whole way of actually telling whether a miracle was genuine or not. I mean, nowadays you have to bring x-rays and doctor's notes, and 90% of people get turned away and they say, well, this isn't a miracle. So when you hear of, these miracles in the Middle Ages, and people today say, oh, well, that's impossible, that couldn't happen. I mean, they had the most stringent tests available at the time to see whether something was a miracle or not. And this has been associated with the Catholic Church right since the start. They've had that. And you just don't get that in the Anglican Church, in the Protestant churches.
No, you don't. And you don't get exorcism. Catholic priests specialise in exorcism as well. But what I can say, without revealing too much, is that this particular miracle, which happened in Portugal at the turn of just before the Russian Revolution, 1917, the next day, an anti-Catholic Masonic paper came out with the headlines of the miracle. So, something for you to wait and see.
Right. We'll get into that next week, no doubt. We've got a few subjects to discuss tonight. The first one is a link that you sent to me, Dennis, and this seems to be doing the rounds. It's about half hour long. It's a YouTube, and it appears to show all these Jews around a table discussing what they're going to do to Poland. And I was first watching this, and I thought, well, they look a little bit young. They're obviously playing the part of being big billionaires. And they're saying things like, well, we want open borders for Poland. Who's going to pay for it? Well, we'll get everybody to pay for it. We'll give everybody citizenship. We'll send citizenship in the post. And we want to give citizenship to Jews. And it seems to me this is a little bit over the top. Okay. We understand that, they probably do conspire like this. They probably do have discussions like this. But they wouldn't be making them open like that. And they wouldn't be quite so, obviously enjoying what they are saying, I don't think. and saying, well, we'll just send out citizenship to everyone in the post so they don't even have to apply for a visa. And then you can see that there's somebody there smiling. So I thought, well, this looks a bit like a dramatization for me. So I looked up the, I looked up the name of the guy, Mark Singer, Siegel, I think it is. And it was supposedly recorded at the Goethe Institute. And of course, that sounds important, like the Mises Institute or something. And I looked it up and he's actually the director of, theatre and photography. So it makes me think that this is probably something to do with drama. He's obviously filming something, and it was students. Maybe it was drama class. Maybe it was politics class. But it's been put up as if it's, this is Jews conspiring to take over the world. And most people seem to have fallen for it. They've gone along with it.
Yeah, well, to be quite honest, it is fairly convincing in the way that is the way that I would think they would talk, and the agenda that they had was very much in line with what I would think they would say. But the red flag for me were when they said they wanted to get 3 million Jews into Poland. This is in, I think it's 2013, so this is, I think, before Poland shut the borders. So, again, it were all tying up. But the one thing was to get 3 million Jews from Israel. Well, I don't think 3 million Jews were ever meant, to leave Israel under any circumstances. So that was but everything talked about and the way, they talked about the Catholic Church being 96%, of Poland's population were Catholic, and how they would try and undermine it by telling the or demanding that the Catholic Church, when it comes to leaving the church, instead of having this bit of a process to go through and a two-hour lecture before someone could leave the church, they felt it should have been easier, made a lot easier because it went against human rights. Well, that's exactly what someone would say, in that position, because they've been using human rights for all kinds of reasons, apart from abortion, which they introduced anyway.
Well, that's what makes me think maybe that's what they were trying to dramatize. You think, were they trying to, was it part of a film or something? And they sort of, or were they trying to mock conspiracies? Were they trying to say, this is what conspiracy theorists think? I can't think, what the motivation would have been for making it.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
You were quite telling, to be honest. It may not be real, but it was quite telling. And when they said, who's going to pay, the taxes for it? And somebody stood up and said, well, we're in Germany.
Yeah.
Again,
And they seem to be laughing at that as if they're in on the joke. Do you know what I mean? As if they're in on it.
I do understand what you're saying, but it is some of this, I'm sure.
Could it have been, could it have been nationalists that were doing it? Could this guy be a nationalist, this theatre guy? Or do they think that this is perfectly fine and this is a politics class and they're imagining what things could be like in 10 years' time? And you just don't know, do you? So I guess it's
art piece. Poland shut the borders, but...
Yeah, well, I think maybe it's an art piece. Maybe it's just been put there to see what people make of it.
Who knows how Jews think?
Well, that's the other thing. It does look like it's actually Jews doing it.
No, it does. So, people look Jewish when we're doing it. One woman was so Jewish, she couldn't really master the English language, but she certainly made a point,
Maybe they actually had casting for it and they picked people that looked Jewish.
Yeah.
I'd really like to know the background.
There were some convincing parts. I mean, one girl was going on like, and it was, she was typical left-wing Jewish, mentality, and it was, probably were anyway, so it probably come naturally to her, eh?
Yeah, interesting. I'd like to find out more about it. I know YouTube have pulled it already from one channel, but it's up on other ones, and I've had other people have linked me to it as well, but nobody seems to know that much about it. All I did was put in the name of the guy, because they said this guy's leading the discussion, and it's something like internationalists or whatever, and I just put it in with the Goethe Institute, and it said that he's an assistant director of theatre and film, so it's nothing to do with economics or politics. We have to find out more about that one. Well, I've got a bit of good news for listeners. I did an interview yesterday with Bishop Williamson, which I'm sure our Catholic listeners will be pleased to hear about. It will be on Radio Arian in a couple of weeks. And broadly, we are in tune with his thinking, basically broadly. You know, Christianity is central. We need Christianity to unite nationalists together. We need to be soldiers of God, not soldiers for men. We need to be fighting for God and against the degeneracy and against Freemasons and the Jews. And he talked all about a lot of the stuff that we've been talking about with the way that the church fought against Freemasonry and how the Jews encouraged the Reformation and they helped Martin Luther. And then we got to the bit where we were talking about World War II. And I asked him about, I said the research that we've been doing, or that you've been doing, Dennis, and about how when Hitler took power, they signed the Rights Concordat, the Rome of Trias was exhibited, 2 million pilgrims turned up for it, it was accompanied by troops of SS troops, how the crown jewels were put back there in Nuremberg. And to me, that symbolizes the start of the Third Holy Roman Empire, the third phase, the Third Reich. And I asked him about this, about what he thought about it and whether he thought that, you know, the Pope might have had an idea of crowning Hitler as Holy Roman Emperor. And he didn't think that was possible. He thought that Hitler was a pagan, which is what most people think. It is what most people think. But then he gave me some of his reasons for this. And I mean, all of this that we've been talking about, Dennis, that happened in 1933. And we do know that, yep, 5 years later, it was a different situation. And the Pope actually sent out an encyclical, which was against National Socialism, basically. And he also sent out one that was against communism. And around about this time, I think maybe Hitler got fed up or annoyed, angry at the church for attacking him like that. Because there are, you know, you do hear about him just getting very annoyed at the church because of the way that some of the priests were acting. And then you've got the Pope actually doing this. So I think when pagans are saying, oh, Hitler was anti-Christian or he was anti-church, I think they're probably talking about this post-1938 period after the Pope had sent out this encyclical. But then we've got a counter argument to that, and I put this counter argument to him that after the war, the church actually helped thousands of National Socialists to escape to Argentina. And he said that was new to him. He hadn't heard that before, but he could well believe it. And that the church would very well have done something like that to help people because, you know, the church did want to help people. So it was a very interesting discussion, but it made me think, you know, there are reasons why people think that Hitler was a pagan. So I thought, you know, maybe we should address some of them. And I think that's one of them is that encyclical from the Pope, which was against Nazism. Have you seen that encyclical, Dennis, that letter?
No, but any criticism of National Socialism, I've always seen the Pope having to walk a tightrope, because at the time, obviously, the Americans and the British and everybody else were in the belief or insisting that he should be on their side, and were furious when he did sign the Concordat. So he has got a tightrope to walk. I mean, 36, what, you know, the Spanish Revolution without Hitler. I mean, I know we were talking last night about what Father Williamson said, but, and I've got the greatest respect for him. I'd love to meet him one day. But when he was saying like that, Hitler was a pagan and, you know, and Franco had won because he was Catholic and Mussolini won because he was only half Catholic or half won.
That was quite funny. That, yeah.
they wouldn't have won the Spanish Revolution without Hitler, and that's a given fact.
Yeah, that's a good point, because he said, well, because then I pointed out, I said, well, it seemed to me that you had these Catholic powers, you had the fascist countries, which were all headed by Catholics, and they fought against communism, and then you had the US, Britain, and the Allies, who were fighting for communism and capitalism, and, you know, they were on the side of the devil, basically, and that was when he said... Yeah. Yeah, that was when he said about, he said, well, Franco was fully Catholic and that was a holy crusade and that was why he won. And he was very quite, really funny to say that. I mean, people will hear it when they listen to it. And he said, and Mussolini was half Catholic. So he sort of half won, but Hitler was a pagan. So he lost. But then he did say, you know, but thanks to Hitler, you know, the whole of Western Europe was saved from communism. And that is directly down to him.
Yeah, but let's be honest. When he died, he received a mass from the Vatican, and Franco called him the son of the Catholic Church. So there's various pointers, which you know the research that I've been looking at hasn't surprised me.
Well, I think this is what it shows, Dennis, isn't it? Is the research that you are doing is so new, and it's not what anyone's dug up before. It's original.
That's right. It took mainly the three documentaries to even get to this point. Researching every day.
You know, the Catholic side of it, I mean, that goes against the Holy Right book as well. But the Holy Right book was a shock, and most people are completely unaware of it. And that shows that there was a massive Protestant side to it. But what you've showed is there was massive links with the Catholic Church as well.
I mean, well, I only showed last week that they smuggled millions, in cash down to South America. And this is after the people down there were already safe. But they're giving them a huge amount of money from wherever, you know, they got it from, Switzerland, wherever, to ensure that they were safe and well looked after. That goes beyond the call of duty. I mean, it goes beyond the call of duty at the end of the war anyway. They could have just said, look, you're on your own, boys. You know, we've got a lot to face now. But they didn't, and they stood up to, you know, stepped up to it. But then to further fund them by sending them millions, which we just covered last week, what can I say?
Well, that's pretty amazing, isn't it?
The words.
You know, to move them out of harm's way from Europe, put them in South America, and then send a load of money after them to make sure that they had pensions and were well looked after.
That's telling me about that.
Yeah, well, because Hitler lost the war, it's been very hard for the people that did help him, and especially the church. And if the church had said, after the war, had said, yes, you know, we helped the National Socialists out, they would have been mercilessly attacked. They had to try and pretend that they were against the National Socialists. But as it was,
it was so tainted with the Holocaust that most Christians refused to admit they were a Christian, even if they really knew you were.
Well, yeah, that was it. They didn't want to be associated with it. I mean, it wouldn't have benefited the Catholic Church to say, yes, we supported Adolf Hitler. They would be trying to do all they could to cover that up, but at the same time, still trying to remain as close to the truth as they could get. And the Pope refused to acknowledge the Holocaust. He never said anything about the supposed gas 6 million, but then... Part of that is because, you know, that wasn't really concentrated on until after the war, was it? Until they started making films.
Three books by Churchill and Eisenhower and a couple of others, no mention of it in 7,000 pages.
Well, there was, you know, there are reports that people in Britain didn't believe it either. And they just thought that this was Jewish stories. And that actually added to anti-Semitism because, you know, they just thought, well, the Jews are lying to us. Nobody believed it. I mean, it's a huge fantasy to say that the Germans killed 6 million Jews by gassing them. You know, why would they go through that bother?
World War I's fed, right? You know, all the propaganda about the killing of the babies in Belgium on bayonets and all this kind of carry on. I think the second time round, the Allies, you know, the people in charge of all this propaganda, didn't want the same thing to happen. And so rather... I mean, nobody even considers that the Germans were stabbing babies in Belgium today after World War One. But with the Second World War, they kept the foot on the pedal with movies and the Holocaust. Never, even today, you know, you see it on TV, you know, this is something nearly 100 years ago. So they never took the foot off the pedal. They've always kept, you know, these centres open where children get... shown all this as well, so it goes on to the next generation and the next generation. Whereas World War One, you know, it was just left in the air after that, and everybody realised what it was.
When you look at the some of the accusations that are made, some of the evidences that pagans put forward to show that Hitler was a pagan. I looked into some of them. Some of them would be the song lyrics. They'd say that some of the song lyrics that the SS were singing were against the church. But when you actually look at these lyrics, they're against the Catholic Church. And I think you'll find that this is because of this Pope's encyclical. When he came out as being against the National Socialists, maybe he had to do that just for the public.
This is what I'm saying. Yeah, this is what I'm saying.
And then we've also got these accusations about them celebrating things like the solstice, but that's just tradition. That's just bringing back old traditions. I mean, the summer solstice is called Whitsuntide is the old British name for it, and there are all sorts of traditions that are associated with it.
Even bigger than that, though, Sven, right? You know, when Father Wellington turns around and says, the Catholic Church, was fighting Freemasonry. Nobody fought Freemasonry more than Hitler did. And I don't know any pagan anywhere in the world that's ever shut down a lodge.
Well,
the only Christians in the Catholic Church shut down lodges and infiltrate lodges and seek the truth. So.
Well, the pagan ideas are linked in with Freemasonry, aren't they?
Yeah, I mean, people say he took Blavatsky's boot with him every night to read. Well, Blavatsky, her teachings are housed by the Lucis Trust. The Lucis Trust is an occult organization with offices in the Communist United Nations, and they adore what Blavatsky says. On that strength alone, I should tell you what Hitler would have thought of Blavatsky.
Well, all the new sort of neo-pagan things, they can be traced back to Freemasonry. I mean, they mention this stuff in Freemasonry. If you go to look at the origins of Freemasonry, you can go to Roslyn Chapel in Scotland.
Yeah.
And they say, well, this Roslyn Chapel, this was built by the Templars. This is, really holy to the Freemasons. And it's got all this Norse pagan, imagery in there alongside the Freemasonic stuff. Which shows you that this link with pagan ideas, which is what the European people rejected, and you can trace these.
You want to be pagan?
Well, yeah, they didn't want to be pagan, but you can trace these. You can trace these ideas back to the Middle East and these Canaanite religions, fertility.
Oh yeah,
religions.
Well, with the EU in Brussels having a building looking like the Tower of Babel, it's all pagan.
Well, and again, if you look at the EU, they have pictures of Europa with the bull. I think Zeus changed himself into a bull and he impregnated Europa. It's full of pagan imagery and using pagan terms for things. Operation
well, they
this,
have a prayer
operation
room
that.
As well, believe it or not, they have a prayer room, and you've got as the court in Israel is the same thing. With court in Israel is supposed to be the world court eventually. With the pyramid with the eye on top. It's the same thing. As you walk into this prayer room in the UN, you come out of the dark into the light type of thing. It's built that way. So you're looking at Luciferianism.
Well, if you go back to any of this Egyptian stuff, you end up with animal-headed gods, which is showing hybridism, mongrelism, and you're looking at a people that had a religion that really worshipped the dead rather than the living. I mean, Christianity is the living God, and the Egyptians were all about death. All these mystery religions supposedly go back
You've
to
actually
Egypt.
Me so much there. I watched a film the week. I'll send you a link, by the way. And it's about Bath, the city of Bath. And apparently, there was obviously it's a Roman town, but in the city of Bath, there's an area which is, you'll go at this one, identical to Stonehenge, to the megalith. So, that took me back to Roosevelt and his Pentagon. And in this particular part of Bath, there were six gates. And apparently some demon escaped out of one of the gates. But it was, that showed Celtic gods with horns. It's a similar type of thing.
Yeah, when you go back, I mean, I don't tend to think that horns have an evil imagery now, but they didn't used to. I mean, in the Old Testament, it said that Moses had horns, you know, horns of light, because when you look at the crescent moon, I mean, it's a smile, like that horn shape, the crown of horns on the stag, you know, the antlers. The horns yeah. were seen as a natural crown, a symbol of royalty. And, you know, it's been turned into something that's now associated with, you know, the goat of Mendes or a Baphomet. But the actual symbolism of horns themselves, they didn't really have this evil imagery. So I'm not
sure. Well, I think the Rothschilds had a party, didn't they? They had, a head of an animal with a horn on. Couldn't tell who it was. It wasn't women, actually. So I think it's a pagan thing as well. You know, I've seen it in pagans.
Well, they have, the Templars were supposedly have a head, didn't they? It was a Baphomet. It was a talking head.
Right. Yeah.
You know, we did a podcast on this a while back, didn't we? And we traced it back to John the Baptist's head and Herod.
Yeah, yeah.
And the way that the Masons sort of go back to that. But Bath, I mean, that was, they'll say, oh, it's the Romans and they built Bath and all this superb Roman technology. But Bath was around long before the Romans actually came here. We had the technology. Yeah. But the Druids themselves, they, you know, they had a different religion. They refused to worship the emperor like the Romans did. You know, they refused to worship a man. They had a triple god. I mean, he's even linked with the Trinity. There are a lot of similarities between the pre-Roman, pre-Christian beliefs in Britain, actually, and Christianity. I mean, it's no coincidence that, you know, both Christianity and Druidism were banned by the Roman Empire, which is also gives a reason for why the Christians came to Britain, why the apostles came to Britain straight away, because it was outside of the Roman Empire. It was outside of the persecution. And the Druids themselves, there's no recorded animosity whatsoever between the Druids and the Christians. And the Druids that actually did convert into Christianity, you got people like Taliesin and the Bard, and they wrote about some of the things that the Druids did. And there's one quote that says that Christianity was a new thing in the East, but there never was a time that the British Druids never followed it, or the British people never followed it. Something like that. It's a very old quote, which is basically saying that.
Yes, I have a different point of view with Druids.
This is old Druids, pre-Christian Druids, not Winston Churchill or modern Mason Druids.
No, I'm talking about when, you know, the ones that the Romans tried to wipe out. And I think the people what went to America are linked into this with Freemasonry. That's my opinion, my thoughts on it. And the actual Grove, Bohemian Grove, is a group of these people. That's my opinion.
Well, with the Druid propaganda, if you look at Julius Caesar's propaganda, obviously he was fighting against the Britons. So he tried to make out that, he tried to say, oh, the Druids, they have human sacrifices, they burn people alive in their houses. But there's no evidence for that anywhere. There's never been found any evidence for human sacrifices. But the main thing is, there's never been evidence found for any idols at all, apart from when Rome was here. You know, the Druids never worshipped idols.
Well, the red flag that I always have with Druids is that they emerge, apparently, from what I've read, they emerge from hiding in Freemasonry, and they actually built Oxford University. And whenever I see Oxford University, I think red flag because of Cecil Rhodes, Rhodes Scholarship, Rothschilds. So I'm always wary when I hear or see what's coming out of Oxford University. But I believe the Druids actually built it. So I don't know, you know, it's a lot of hidden history, I don't know.
Well, I would say with that, the Masons themselves would probably say, oh, we came from the Druids, because they're covering up for the fact that they came from the Jews. Do you know what I mean? They're covering up for the fact that they came from the Jews. If they can say, oh, well, we came from the Druids. Oh, we actually came from British sensibilities. We came from a British religion. Oh, yeah. They didn't. They came from the Jews. So, you know, that's them pretending to have a heritage that they don't actually have. But as far as the Oxford University, and it's written that we had 40 main cities in Britain, and every city had a juridic college there, and all the nobility of Gaul and Britain was educated in these 40 cities. And we still have, some of them still have the same names, but there was Canterbury, Cardiff, there would have been Oxford, and there would have been one of these universities there. So Oxford University itself is probably trying to lay claim to that tradition, although it wouldn't have still been there, because when the Saxons came over, they drove all the British into Wales, and these were British universities. So what you had there, and you had Bangor, which was the main one, which is in North Wales, that was still going. But all the English ones, or all the ones in England, would have been shut down in the 6th century. So for Oxford to say, oh, we've got a tradition going back to the Druids, that's a nonsense. Because the Druids were, by that time, were the Welsh people that were in Wales. Because the Anglo-Saxons were a completely different group that came over. So, do you see what I mean? It's what it is there. Yeah, it's the Masons. Listen,
I mean, I know you know your stuff, Sven, so all I'm saying is, you know, there's been some cross wires when I've been researching. That's all I'm saying.
Well, most people aren't aware of this. Because they've read the you know, Freemasons write a lot of books where they're exposing Freemasons, and there's a goal to that. The goal to that is to distract people from the Jews, because they'll never say we got it all from the Jews, but they will write books and claim to be coming from Druidry, so that they can claim to have a heritage that they don't have. And you also get the New Ages doing it as well. You know, the witchcraft, yeah, and the New Ages. They'll try and say, oh, this is what the ancient British people used to do. No, it isn't. They've got no idea what the ancient British people used to do. The only people that wrote about what the British people used to do were the early British Christians, the Celtic Christians. And all of that information is, you know, it's covered up, really. It's not talked about. They pretend that we were just Stone Age savages, and yet we managed to, you know, defeat the might of Rome twice. It took them 150 years to, you know, finally get Britain to accept that we would have a treaty with them. We had two wars with them, defeated them in both of these wars, and you're talking the entire might of the Roman Empire against this one tiny island. So the people that defeated them, that they weren't savages. And, you know, when even Caesar writes that all the nobility from Gaul, as the whole of, you know, that part of Europe there, used to travel to Britain to be educated. We had roads because we had, you know, chariots, wheeled chariots. In order to have wheeled chariots, you have to have proper roads. You can't ride them in the mud. Yeah. We were very advanced, and there are reports of these Druids going to Greece and Athens, and they spoke Greece, these British Druids. There's one report that talks about them flying there on an arrow. And what it was an arrow on his compass, on his magnetic compass. It's fascinating history. I've refreshed my memory with it recently, because I've been reading a book on it.
Yeah, well, there's a couple of guys who are on YouTube, or I listened to a couple of weeks ago, somebody asked me to take a look at them, and they're revealing a lot of it in this about Britain, which surprised me. So, but the question is, why has it all been hidden? This is going to be the question, you know.
Well, I think because I think the church got taken over basically, and used as an internationalist thing, you know, for an empire building thing, where they could take it to Africa, take it to China. Say it's all internationalist, and in order to do that, they want to say, well, you know, we've got the truth, and they don't want you to look into the British history of it, because you then find out that, you know, there was this Celtic church which had different views in actual fact.
Well, even talk of Jesus and Joseph and visiting Britain, you know, that's
a part of it. You know, Joseph of Arimathea. I mean, there's lots of legends about Joseph of Arimathea going to Glastonbury. Did he bring the young Jesus here with him? And it tells us that Joseph of Arimathea was a nobilis decurio. He was, you know, quite high up as a Roman officer, and he was responsible for the tin trade. And the island that sold the tin was Britain. And straight after the crucifixion, you've got this persecution of the Judeans. So obviously, you know, Joseph of Arimathea would want to come to Britain. And that's what the early martyrologies and the Greeks that were writing about this said. But an interesting thing about the belief of the Celtic Church, they had a liturgy, and in the liturgy, they talk about Eve being seduced by the serpent, Cain being being that son. So, you know, maybe there was something to do with that, because, you know, this is, I mean, in Christian identity, you can trace the Jews back to Cain and the serpent. And this Celtic Church, that was part of their liturgy, was talking about that. So maybe that was one of the reasons they wanted to sort of cover it up. But at the time, you had the Celtic Church, you had what's now the Eastern Orthodox Church, and what's now the Roman Catholic Church, and they were all one church for the first 1,000 years.
That's right.
And then after that, you had a schism in the 10th century, and the Eastern Orthodox split from the Catholic, and then you've got the Roman Catholic, the Eastern Orthodox, and the Celtic Church by then had sort of been absorbed by the other two. But I think that first 1,000 years, when you're talking about Christianity, you really want to look at what happened at that time, and when we had that unity, and what was achieved in that time, because, you know, they got rid of the Jews in all the countries. They put laws in place. We had no Jews in Britain at the time. Constantine, once Christianity became the religion of Rome, he made all these laws against the Jews. They couldn't practice usury. They couldn't own, couldn't own Christians, couldn't marry Christians. And they left. They all left and went to Khazaria, and then started having wars against the Russians next door. So I think that's, you know,
being put into doubt these days.
Yeah.
With David Duke and a few others, you know.
Yeah, I really don't know why he does that. I don't know. But if you, and once again, if you go back and look at the actual church histories, and remember it was the churchmen that were writing the histories at the times, it's full of these Jews in Khazaria, and calling them the Antichrist. It makes it really clear that the whole of Khazaria was Jewish. They had converted. It's like in Britain, if you go back 1500 years and you've got your king there, your king wants to become a Christian. Everyone else becomes a Christian as well. They do what the king does. You don't have free will like you do now. You do what the king does. And the king in Khazaria converted to Judaism. So all the Khazars did. And they interbred with them. And that is a fact of history that's known by Russia.
Yeah. Benjamin Freeman stipulates that historians, highly rated historians, have written about him, and there's no denying it. So, you know.
I don't know why he denies it, because he claims that he went to university in Russia as well, didn't he, in the Ukraine. So you would think that he would know about it. Not pretending that it was just something that was made up by a Jewish author 50 years ago, because, I mean, you're talking about books and information from like 800 years old.
Yeah.
I mean, Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson.
If he said, I believe him.
Yeah, there is a lot of evidence. There is a lot of evidence for it. I mean, really, you just have to go back and look at the church stuff. And if you're a nationalist, if you're a patriot, you know, that's what you should be doing, to be finding out about your country. And if you want to find out about the pagan stuff, because it was the churchmen that wrote it all down, wrote down our traditions. You know, when we...
Well, the Marxists today want all that abbreviated, don't they, to be honest. They don't want people with roots, so the longer it goes on. I mean, I heard not too long ago in I think it was in Sweden or Denmark, where they were getting rid of the Viking artifacts.
And do you know why they're doing that? Because they've got a foreigner in charge of archaeology over the Swedish artifacts, like, you know, British heritage. They've got some Pakistani in charge.
I can well believe it.
So they're literally melting it down.
Yeah.
Soon or later, they're going to start saying that they had Negro Vikings and Negro Viking ships.
Yeah.
Kind of be on its way, isn't it? We've got them in the, you know, they were here with the Romans, according to the BBC.
Well, yeah, today. So, you know, they'll make someone up, and then they'll make a couple of Hollywood movies, and everyone will say, oh, yeah.
Well, we have seen a bit of an uprising in Chemnitz last week, which was very encouraging.
Which is good.
Yeah, thousands of people. I mean, it's obviously horrible that somebody got somebody got stabbed and killed. He wasn't actually German. He was only partially German, but the two people he was with, they were German. And these savages that attacked them, they were groping the women, and they were demanding that this guy hand over his money from the cash point. And he refused to, so he got stabbed to death. And these other two lads got stabbed as well. They're still in critical condition. And the townspeople said, right, well, this is it. We've had enough of this. This has been going on for too long. We're putting our foot down. And the German media portrayed them all as Nazis. And it was all the townsfolk. They were furious about it. And there's videos of them telling the liberal reporter what for. And, you know, we've been told this is a really big thing. Brittany Pettibone, she did a report. I think she said there was about 10,000 people there. That's a lot of people to just turn up at the drop of a hat. And I noticed this week there's like an album been put out by five bands, each one, like nationalist bands, each one putting out a song about Chemnitz. So it's obviously a big thing that's happening over there. I just hope it doesn't fizzle out.
Well, someone said to me that she's in danger of being beaten, Merkel. And she's made plans to move to South America if that happens.
She really needs to be beaten.
Safe down there, though.
Well, the AfD are doing really well. The Alternative for Deutschland they've gone up a couple of points, and she's gone down a couple of points. And all the reports about this hardly said anything at all about the stabbings. It was all just about, oh, what a horror it is to have Nazis on the streets, racists on the streets. We must do something about this. It's a threat to democracy. Nothing about the stabbings. No condemnation of the stabbings whatsoever. Any German that's reading that is going to be furious. I mean, nobody's better at radicalizing the German people than Merkel herself, I think, really.
Yeah.
We've also got...
go on, sorry.
I say we've also got probably going to have some good news from Sweden this weekend. They've got an election coming up, and the nationalists are doing really well over there. But we've got some... Sorry?
Maybe they can save the country yet.
Yeah, I'm hoping so. I really am. They're saying that they're going up in the polls, and the Swedish Democrats are going to be the kingmakers. So they'll probably have a hung parliament, and then each group will have to talk to the Swedish Democrats in order to get into power. And the BBC are calling the Swedish Democrats far right, although we probably wouldn't call them far right, but good all the same, just that they've finally moving to the right. But we've also got something else that's could blow up fairly soon, and that's what's happening in Syria and Idlib. And I know you've been looking into this a bit, haven't you, Dennis, with Putin and these smears and slanders against him.
Yeah, I've got to say, you know, you could make a case for him and you could make a case against him. He's that much of an enigma. But having said that, if you stick to actions speak louder than words, then it comes down on the right side in my eyes. I mean, he was only voted in to be Prime Minister, as far as I can remember, and yet he's still there. He's kind of manipulated the system where, you know, and to be honest, he is popular with, for instance, a catalyst or a way of weighing it up. In my eyes, is the Cossacks. Now, you know, in World War II, how the Cossacks fought with the Germans to try and claim back Russia. And at one point, they were sent back. The British sent them back to certain death. So under Stalin and the communist regime, the Cossacks were treated badly. Let's put it that way, very badly. Where under Putin, they would die for him. I saw a documentary, and they would literally die for him. So that's got to tell me something. And they're die-hard Christians. They really are. So there's little pointers like that which throws everything up in the air. But then again, you see him going visiting Israel, and he's the first, you know, leader of Russia to go and visit him. So, you know, then so people's got ammunition there. So he is an enigma for sure.
That's a really good point about the Cossacks. I hadn't thought about that one, but that is a really good point. But as far as Israel is concerned, I guess what you've got to look at and think in the communist era, you know, they were against Israel because they didn't want Jews to be going to Israel. If you were a Jew, you were either a Zionist or you were a communist. So they were against Israel. So I would, you know, I mean, there probably is an element of we're not communist now, so we're going to make a big point of being friendly towards Israel. You know, there may be something of that.
Right, that if you take that view, he's in with Israel, he's in with the Jews type of thing. But then when he's in Syria, now, I know Israel wanted to take Syria down because the big target is Iran. And they didn't really want Syria in the way. So they were going to take Syria down first, leading the way then to take Iran. And, you know, they treat the ISIS fighters. That moron who died last week, and I have no apologies for saying he's a moron, actually bragged about knowing ISIS and funding them and all the rest, had his photo taken with the ISIS leaders. So pretty obvious. I mean, I had Barack Obama making a statement in communism by the back door saying that, you know, we funded ISIS and all this kind of thing. They had to come back and retract it, but I mean, he'd already slipped up. So just Putin goes in there, and as far what I read the other week was he warned Israel not to get involved because he's now supplied Syria with these weapons, what take down anti-aircraft guns, which will take down an Israeli plane, you know what I mean? And Putin's more or less said, you know, things are only going to get worse if you get involved. And he's already allied with Iran with the fighters in Syria. So there's an allegiance there with Iran. And then he's got the BRICS, which is, you know, pulling away from the Rothschilds cabal. So his actions are, you know, I wouldn't say mysterious. He's had five known attempts at assassination. And now I can't think of any Western leader what's even come close to having apart from, say Reagan. And everybody thought Bush planned that one. So, you know, that again tells you something. Because when the car crash, a couple of years ago, when you look at one camera, you just think it's an accident. But if you look through another camera on that stretch, the car actually leaves the other side and goes straight for him. The chauffeur was killed. Creasy wasn't in the car, but it looks like a suicide attempt to me anyway. So people do want him, you know, dead.
So there was someone attempting to kill him, thinking he was in the car?
Yeah. Smashed straight into the car, head on, crossed over into the runway, and just happened to hit Putin's car.
No, I haven't seen that. With Israel, I mean, what he's probably said is, I'm going to be helping Assad to get rid of these Muslims, but we won't
be going
after you.
Which supposed to help as well.
Yeah, but he's probably said, you know, I won't let them go after you. And that's, you know, that's probably the deal as far as Israel is concerned. But Israel is still arming and paying the jihadi groups. That came out this week. It was in the Jerusalem Post. They're paying the jihadis $5,000 a month and handing them all these weapons. And it comes under this name like Operation Good Neighbor. Operation Good Neighbor. What a name to pick for that. Arming the jihadis in your neighboring country to take down, you know, the government. And they call it Operation Good Neighbor. And apparently that's their humanitarian aid. And everything Assad said about the humanitarian aid being weapons has been proved right. And the IDF were handing it over. And this article appeared on the Jerusalem Post for about an hour. And then it got pulled. Obviously, Israel said, we can't have this up. But once it's been up, it's been up. That just shows you who's behind it or who's encouraging it.
I can simplify it, really, for listeners listening in. Forget it's the Middle East. You know, that to me, it just throws people off the scent. You've got to remember the world revolution, which we've been covering in the West in this secret Masonic victory, World War II. So they've conquered Europe. Now, they still haven't conquered the Middle East. And to get world domination, you've got to conquer the Middle East. So you take down Iraq, you take down Libya, you're into Syria when Putin steps in. But they're going to take, if they do take Syria, then they go for Iran because they want rid of all sovereign states. And that's the simplicity of it all. It is still the world revolution. What is going on? I mean, he's a Trotskyite. He's all the neocons and Bush and Cheney and all them. They're just Bolsheviks. And they're just carrying on this Bolshevik spread of communism. Although, of course, not a lot of people know it's hidden. But you look around you now and there's more politically correct and there's more communist ideas coming in. There's race mixing coming in. So it's all coming in. It's just that Marxism doesn't move fast.
Well, I think you're right there. I mean, if Syria falls, you know, then they've got the Middle East there. If Russia steps in there and props Syria up, then it preserves that multipolar world. You've got Russia and you've got the Russian axis with the former Soviet countries. And then you've got, the American axis. If Syria goes, then America's suddenly got all that more power. But what they're doing at the moment, and this is just incredible, this is, for the last month, Russia have been saying, we've got evidence to show that the White Helmets were bringing in all the materials for making chemical weapons and handing them over to the jihadis in Idlib. We've got the evidence. Yeah. We've got the photographic evidence. We've got the video evidence. We've got all the proof. They put it on all their news channels. They put it in all their newspapers. They've said it at the UN. And America and Britain have completely ignored it. They haven't even reported on it in the news. And then this week, they're suddenly giving threats to Assad. If any chemical weapons are used, we're going to come straight after you. And they're saying that they've got reports from the people in Idlib, which is the jihadis, basically, that Assad is threatening on gassing them. And on the BBC today, they had one of these jihadis, and he's like making a homemade gas mask because, you know, that they've heard that Assad is going to gas them. And this jihadi was pretending to be a civilian as well. I mean, what do they think? Yeah. Do they think that, you know, we don't actually watch RT? We don't watch the Russian news or something? Do they honestly think we don't know that, you know, that the Russians have already said this a month ago?
Apparently, right, there's a last enclavement of these rebels. And Assad has said to move forces after negotiations, these rebels aren't going anywhere. So Assad's thinking, you know, it's never going to be right until every rebel has been eliminated from Syria. And you're quite right to say that. But in doing so, obviously, you know, the Russian troops, the Russian Christian troops, by the way, are starting to take place as well. They're going to be joining in the same battle. And then Trump turns around and says to Assad, this could be 100,000 lives. We're warning you of the consequences. So he's more or less telling Assad that he has to tiptoe around these rebels or even leave them alone. So you work that one out, because I'm pretty sure Putin's going to go to wipe them out, as he has done in every other area. I don't think, you know, the threat of Trump is going to stop him, and this could be a problem, major.
Yeah, this is the last enclave of them. And they've been in negotiations with them. This is the thing. America said, we will separate the moderate rebels from the extremist rebels. They said, we will separate, the peaceful protesters from the jihadis. And then you can go in after the jihadis. And America hasn't separated them at all. Or maybe they have, because they removed the White Helmets. But they're the jihadis, basically. They removed the white helmets, didn't they?
They touted as a humanitarian outfit. On the website, we can donate.
Do they need donations? Do they? They got, what is it? They got 5 million or 5 billion. I'm not sure which, from Britain. Yeah. Loads
it's
of money.
Well known about them being, you know, double standards instigators and things, yeah.
But then they said, you know, so they said that they would separate the jihadis from the peaceful protesters, which America hasn't done, apart from removing the white helmets so that they don't actually have to be tried when they're caught, because that's what Assad wants to do, is put them in court, and put the evidence against them. Oh, no, we can't have that. We'll have to remove them. So then Assad and Russia have been doing, trying to do a deal with the rebels, saying, look, let the civilians go. We'll let you go. Okay. You can leave Assyria if you want. You can go back to Israel. And, you know, they're saying, no, we're staying here and we're not letting the civilians go either.
That's not what the BBC said, you know.
Yeah.
Kujat said of being gung-ho and at least it could negotiate. That was the BBC stance.
Yeah, well, this is just it. They've been trying to negotiate for months, and these jihadis just won't let the civilians go. It's exactly the same as in every area. And then when they finally do liberate the area, you see all the interviews with the civilian saying, oh, thank God, you know, we've been surviving on, you know, rats' tails and grass, and we haven't eaten for 6 months, and these jihadis were charging us $500 for a loaf of bread. And then the BBC says, oh well, things are a lot better now. And then they just leave it. You know, I've never yet seen any of these people that have been rescued attacking Assad. They're all really thankful and saying, well, thank God that you've actually come in. And, you know, I mean, we're nationalists and we look into this, but, you know, surely people that aren't can see what's going on. They must do. Everyone's got RT at home on the television. You know, it's on Freeview. It's on every morning. You can switch on every minute of the day and find out, you know, the other side of what's going on in Syria.
Probably the majority watch, you know, mainstream television, and you know, at the moment they're back on the Russian thing with the poisoning. So at every turn, they've developed a propaganda campaign against Russia. Down in the Ukraine, which is very similar to Austria. When Austria voted over 98% to go back with Germany, the Ukrainian voted to, you know, in Crimea, sorry, voted to go back to the Soviet, you know, they wanted to stay with the Soviet Union. And that election has never been actually, you know, seen by America. They've ignored it totally and said that Putin has took it under, you know, just like Hitler did with Austria, invaded.
Oh, yeah, it's so, aggression. Putin's aggression in the Ukraine.
Yeah, that's the one.
Incredible.
That's the one. But what they really did was the Russian fleet having to move over, right over to the other side of Russia if the Crimea went. And, you know, the Black Sea and all that, you know, would have been not patrolled by Russians, but by Israel.
Yeah, quite incredible. That they would have the front to think that they could just steal Ukraine and the Crimea and Russia would just sit back and do nothing, or just that the people of Crimea would sit back and do nothing. I mean, their standard of living has, you know, it's doubled, it's tripled since they became a part of Russia. You know, their pensions actually tripled, the benefits that they were receiving.
Yeah.
But, you know, part of the problem with this is, I mean, Britain has said, right, we've cut off all diplomatic ties with Russia. So they're not talking to Russia. So what we're actually getting on RT, you know, the British politicians are saying, we don't know anything about that. You know, they've refused to talk to Russia about the Skripal case. They've refused to hand the evidence over. I mean, I mentioned this the other day, but
if it's
Russians, that killed this Skripal guy, Russia doesn't have an extradition agreement with anyone. Yeah, Russia won't extradite Russian citizens, which I don't believe any country should have an extradition agreement.
Right.
But what they do, they say, well, give us your evidence and we'll try these people, because then they'll get a fair trial. Because that's what they'd be worried about. Any country should be worried that its citizens won't get a fair trial in a country where they supposedly committed a crime, because you're in effect, you've got the victims are the judges.
Yes.
So they knew right from the start, if it was Russians that did this, the only chance there is of justice is if these people are tried in Russia. The only way they could get them tried in Russia is to work with the Russian authorities, give them the evidence, give them the case, tell them who it is that the Russian authorities should be looking for. And Britain has point blank refused to even pick up the phone and say anything. They've actually given these details and given them to Interpol. They haven't even given them to Russia, which is saying we don't want them to be tried. That, you know, at least then they could, if Russia then didn't do anything about it, they could say, well, Russia hasn't even gone looking for these people. Or they could say, Russia hasn't charged these people with the crime. But they can't, because, you know, they haven't given the information to them to do that. Most people don't seem to be pointing that out.
This campaign has been held against them. I mean, remember them, that punk band, the girl punk band.
Pussy Riot.
Yeah, Pussy Riot. It caused some grief over there as well. They got put in prison. Putin got a lot of stick from the West over that. He's got anti-gay laws where he restricts, you know, he doesn't have these parades. Parades, you know, he has certain rules that, you know, you can carry on, but you don't influence children or the family. And, you know, you keep yourselves to yourselves. So he's got a lot of stick over that. He's actually brought down the abortion limit. It's not totally, you know, it's not totally been wiped out, which will be nice. But he has brought down the, you know, the time limit when you can have an abortion. Maybe he's working his way towards that eventual aim. So there's a lot of good things what he's doing. You can't deny. And I think Oliver Stone's made a documentary which I'm looking to watch. But you know, other things that he's done. He went to the UN and he actually said, "Do you realise what you've done?" He was on about Libya and Iraq and Syria, and you're creating these vacuums for these extremists. And he criticised the West for rejecting the Christian roots and for gender manipulation, to put Satanists on the equal standard as Christians. He criticises the gay marriage, political correctness. He even points out the promotion of paedophilia. He claims that minorities must never overrule the majority, which they have done in Britain, as you know, and in Europe, which actually changed the complete culture eventually, and the country's handed over to another race. And then all these things, what he's criticising for, he turns around and says, and they're trying to force this on other countries. And what's he say wrong, you know?
Well, that's just it, isn't it? It's all that protection of tradition. That's what they don't like. If he was to turn around and say, we're going to move in a liberal direction now, we're going to change all of that, straight away they'd be best buddies with him. They'd be best friends with him.
Yeah.
Thank God he doesn't.
Well, he has warned about the missile bases as well, by the way. He said at one of the last meetings he had with reporters from the West, I can't tell you any more than what I'm telling you. But he said, we know exactly what the situation is. You know, at this moment in time, you can't affect our nuclear system, but the day will come, and we will know what it is, when our nuclear arsenal will be under threat. And, you know, you keep pushing these bases in Romania and in Poland and everywhere else, you know, I mean, they're surrounded, the Soviet Union. And he's right. This is what Soros and people like that, who he hates, by the way, you know, want the Soviet Union, Russia rather, to come crashing down again.
Yeah, they're encroaching on him on all sides, and he is a good man doing what he's doing. I just pray that he continues and that they get these terrorists out of Idlib, and he continues to make fools out of the Americans and the British. It's great to watch, and I hope RT stays on British television. Dennis, we've come to the end of the podcast. Thank you very much for coming on today. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. We'll be back next week with more Truthful Out Radio for you. And of course, we do hope you have a great weekend.
To Radio Aryan.